You are about to witness history in the making. Despite the world's highest living standards, the average American remained vaguely discontent, aware that his goal of a better way of life had still not been fully realized. There was something missing.
There's this awful gap in our lives just because we don't have... Oh, but why talk about it?
It's just that... Oh, I keep hoping someone can find a way to...
Don't be a fool, Mary. You know that's impossible.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
Gad, it's ironic. With all our technology and industrial know-how, we still don't have the one thing that could give us a better way of life.
It's the Forgotten Filmcast.
I guess I might as well stay tonight. But I'm not going home.
Welcome to episode 216 of the Forgotten Filmcast. My name is Todd Liebenow, and thanks for joining me for this look at the movies that time forgot. On this episode, I'll be joined by Jason Soto from Rabbit Hole Podcasts to discuss the 1999 film that gives us a late 90s look at the futuristic technology of virtual reality. Starring Craig Bierko, Gretchen Mol, and Vincent D'Onofrio, directed by Joseph Rusnak. It's The 13th Floor. But first...
Yes, when you leave home and go into service, you're going to come face to face with...
The Forgotten Film Cast.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat. The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Jim Rex? What's Jim Rex? Would you believe a movie audience guide presented as a public service by this theater's management to help you select your motion picture entertainment? Well, that's what it is. And we urge you to learn these rating symbols and use them as a guide for you and your family. G means suggested for general audiences, all ages. M, suggested for mature audiences, parental discretion advised. R, restricted, persons under 16 not admitted unless accompanied by parent or adult guardian. X, persons under 16 will not be admitted. This seal in advertising indicates that the film was approved under the Motion Picture Code of Self-Regulation.
Drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater, where you will see the finest motion pictures of all time soon to be released. Drama, comedy, adventure, excitement, something for everyone. Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
Sydney, it's time, baby.
Greg Reed and his friends.
Hey, oh. Is that my brother?
Had it all.
I'm hitting a different girl every night.
All the action and every thrill they desired. And their dreams.
I'm worried about you, boy.
That's a good yo. Y'all need to taste this yo. That's a good yo.
Because when life is rough.
Watch out, man. Hey, you look like you just got off the All-Star party boat.
Sink it! Give us free!
I'll give you some fat-free water. That's what you need.
When your family gets you down.
Say sausage.
It's turkey sausage, Daddy.
What sick mother would make sausage out of a damn turkey?
And when times are hard.
Get out! Get out! I want you out of my house! And give me my bus pass, bitch!
Just use your imagination.
Greg's tripping again. TV!
If every fantasy is real.
Tell him I'm busy, getting busy. He knows what I mean.
You must be tripping.
Son.
Wake up.
Hmm? What? Yeah. Me too.
Tripping.
In a town that takes soccer seriously.
Soccer is war, and the weak will drop by the sideline.
One team is in need of serious help.
We need a miracle.
They need Soccer Dog.
Let's get this dog a uniform.
Break it! I'm open!
That's great footwork.
Want us to pick up some cement for us?
Columbia TriStar Home Video introduces Soccer Dog, the movie.
Huh? Something's missing.
See this ransom money? Take a good look at it. Because this is all the money that you're not going to get.
He's a different breed of action hero.
Good boy.
In a movie where winning isn't everything.
Yeah. But at least we made the spread, you know?
But it sure is the... Soccer Dog, the movie.
You have to stay focused. Are you focused? Are you focused with me, Mickey? I'm sorry, Nancy.
Go! 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, showtime!
Not bad. Owner of a $2 billion enterprise. Strange Fuller would amend his will just a couple of days before he died.
I was on an airplane when it happened.
According to the security guard, Fuller left the office at 10:30 p.m., 30 minutes after your plane arrived. Yeah, autopsy shows that he died around midnight. Theoretically, you had enough time to catch up with him.
But I didn't. I went straight home.
Didn't talk to him at all that night?
No.
No emails, no faxes, not even a message?
None of the above.
You know, that's funny. Because we checked Fuller's phone records. He made a call with his calling card at 11:02 p.m. Your home number. I'd appreciate it if you didn't leave town for the next couple of days. And get that game fixed. It's missing a spring or something.
You have no new message. Restore. Restore. To restore messages, press rewind now. Yesterday at 2:45 p.m.
But I managed to reschedule for Wednesday.
Yesterday at 5:14 p.m.
Hello, Mr. Hall.
Yesterday at 11:02 p.m.
Douglas, it's me. Listen, I've stumbled onto something incredible. It's changed everything. I'm here in Sunbown, Maine, and 7th. In case something happens to me, I left you a message in the system. I gave it to... How did you find me?
Okay, our movie this time is The 13th Floor from 1999, and joining me to discuss this film is Jason Soto from Rabbit Hole Podcast. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back. I had so much fun last time. I was like, I'm coming back.
You can't stop me. Coming back.
Well, it's always great to have you back on the show. I actually feel like you're one of the most frequent voices on the show nowadays because I play ads for Rabbit Hole Podcasts every week on this show. So it's like,
oh, nice.
There's Jason's voice again on the show. but
that's
now
nice.
you're here not just to pimp your stuff, but to actually have a discussion. But before we do that, we'll have you pimp your stuff. Go ahead and tell everybody a bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. To anyone who may be new, my name is Jason. I am a Gemini. I like long walks on the beach. And I run a podcast network called Rabbit Hole Podcasts, which you can find every show we do over at rabbitholepodcast.com. Basically, it's just a network of me and my friends, and we cover mostly pop culture, movies, TV shows, music. We got a book club even. A lot of different stuff for different folks. Literally, there's something for everybody. But one of my favorite shows that I do, and it's sort of related to tonight's film, is called That's the Bomio 90 Hella Rad Movies from the 90s, where each episode I cover a different movie from the 90s. And I have a guest on, and we just kind of wax nostalgic about the movie, talk about why we like it, maybe why we didn't like it, why it might be important to the 90s. And it's a lot of fun. We had a great discussion. And, and it actually spawned a spinoff. I don't want to call it a spinoff, a sister show, but it's called That's Bodacious Dude. 80 radical movies from the 80s, because I'm very good at coming up with titles of podcasts, in case you hadn't noticed. But I don't host that one. My friend Isabel Turan, she took the mantle on the 80s one. And you're going to ask me, wait, I've heard Isabel on podcasts. She's like way younger than you, but she doesn't know anything about the 80s. Why are you having her host an 80s podcast? And I say, shut up and just let her cook. No, she's great. Isabel is seriously wonderful. She does a great job over there, and I couldn't be more proud of her to take up the mantle of the 80s show.
Well, I'm always down for things that are about the 80s. I mean, you know, you talk about how the 90s films are kind of the formative decade for you. The 80s is definitely that for me. So it's always one thing I do enjoy about your 90s show is that, I mean, while I do have a level of nostalgia about those films, it's not quite the same as it would be if I had been younger during that decade. You know, the 90s was when I was, you know, starting my adult life, and I was moving across the country and getting used to dealing with, you know, having a wife and having a mortgage and having a real job and all those kinds of things, you know. So it's not quite the same outlook I have on the movies of that decade. So it's great to hear folks where that was really the films that kind of turned them into film fans. And there's nothing wrong with coming up with the title first. I mean, that's what, like, Roger Corman did all the time. You know, you come up with a great title, and then you make a movie, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you said that your 90s show is one of your favorites. I mean, you have tons. You actually kind of stole one of my questions there. I guess other than your 90s one, do you have a favorite? Because, I mean, how many do you actually host now? There's a lot of shows that you don't host there, but there's a number that you do. And I always wonder, when does Jason, like, sleep and things like that, you know?
Well, okay, so it helps that a good number of them are monthly shows where I only do them once a month. So that helps a lot. So to anyone out there who wants to start a podcast network and they want to have a slew of podcasts on this podcast network, tip number one, make some of them monthly shows. You only have to worry about them once a month, and you're good to go. How many do I host? That's a damn good question, actually. I'm going to my website now, and I'm counting 2, 3, 4. I'm counting active ones, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I got 10.
Oh, boy.
Now, remember, some of those are monthly. I don't do those all the time.
Yeah, but still, I mean, there's only so many days in the month. That's a third of the days in the month.
And some of them are just as easy as turning on a microphone and talking for an hour. So it's not like I got to do a lot of major prep ahead of time. Second tip for anyone who wants to have a podcast network, make one or two of the shows where you don't got to do any kind of prep for it. You literally just plan a day, turn your microphone on, hit record, and then just talk for an hour, hour and a half, and you're golden.
Listeners, you didn't know you were going to get Jason Soto's podcasting school here today.
Exactly. The rest of the tips, you got to buy the book. I'm not going to spoil all my secrets.
We're waiting for your TED Talk. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, indeed. No.
So with all these topics that you do shows about, I mean, are there some that are like cooking back there where you're like, you know, I really would like to do a show about this someday, and I just haven't pulled the trigger yet?
Oh, you know what? Seriously, all the time, I'm just going through life, and I think of just stuff that I think would be a fun podcast. But, you know, I just said I do 10 shows, and I don't know if I want to add another. I've gotten to the point where I create shows, and then I just give them to other people. The last three that I have done, that I've come up with, I just gave them to other people. So,
well, you know, that's the mark of a good leader, you know, delegation. You know, I guess got that nailed. So excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get on to this movie we have here today. One that I'm sure has not been covered on your 90s podcast before.
No, it has not.
To be honest with you, this is one that I don't know that I really, remembered at all coming out. This is The 13th Floor. It's from 1999. So just barely in the 90s there. Directed by Joseph Rusnak. He's a German screenwriter and director, not a big name. He directed a few small films and TV movies in the 80s and 90s. What led to this film, though, from what I read, was that he served as the second unit director on Roland Emmerich's Godzilla film.
Yes.
And so then Emmerich would serve as a producer on this film and gave him the chance to direct it. The film is based on a 1964 novel called Simulacron 3. And apparently it previously been adapted for the screen. It was turned into a German TV miniseries that's called World on a Wire. It's directed by acclaimed director Rainer Werner Fassbender. So, it's kind of well known. But this version, it begins in what appears to be 1937 Los Angeles, where we see a respected man played by Armin Mueller-Stahl, and he goes out to this fancy nightclub and goes and meets with the bartender there. He gives him an envelope with a message in it. He says, someone's going to come and pick this up, probably. The bartender's played by Vincent D'Onofrio. And so he tells him, this guy named Douglas Hall, he's going to come at some point and get this message from you. Well, then the next thing we know, we see Armin Mueller-Stahl's character waking up in a futuristic laboratory of sorts. And it turns out he is a scientist named Hannon Fuller, and he has developed a sort of new technology that we today would probably call virtual reality.
Yes. Kids out there listening, you think like AI is like the big thing nowadays. Everyone's scared about AI. Back in the 90s, we had virtual reality. All right. You have no idea. And Todd can maybe back me up on this. Virtual reality was everywhere in the 90s. It just took a hold of everybody. Being sucked into a computer was like the thing of the 90s. It was just such a fascinating thing to us back then. Like now it's old hat. It's like, whatever. We have video games where I'm literally plugging myself into the game. No, back in the 90s, we had to wear these dorky headsets. They're still kind of dorky today, but they're even more dorkier they were in the 90s. And it was just all about the virtuality, virtual reality. Like, it was a nuts how much
it was
going
scary
on.
Stuff. It was, yeah.
So they made movies about it, too, on top of that. This is one of them.
It's a hot topic. So now, once we kind of establish all this, we shift our focus to this guy that has been mentioned before, Douglas Hall. He's played by Craig Bierko. Yes. And he is an associate of Fuller's. He wakes up to find that there are bloody clothes in his bathroom. And yes. There is a message on his answering machine from a police detective named McBain, played by Dennis Haysbert. Yeah, I couldn't help but think of The Simpsons every time they said his name.
Right.
But it seems that Fuller, the scientist, has been found dead. And, of course, Douglas is the prime suspect.
Yeah.
Thing is, he has no memory of having any sort of run-in with Fuller, even though the evidence seems to be stacking up and pointing that direction. Now, things get even more complicated when a lovely young woman shows up claiming to be Jane Fuller, the daughter of the scientist, Tannen Fuller. Although Douglas always thought that Fuller had no kids. The daughter is played by Gretchen Mol.
Yes.
Now, this is one of those movies where I was like, how am I going to sum this up? I hope you're all following this. So, anyway.
You're doing a good job, Todd. You're doing a good job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Douglas decides he needs to try and figure out what is going on and decides that the answer lies with him jacking into this virtual reality device. That's what they call it in the movie. They call it jacking in.
Every time they said that, I just laughed. I could not take it seriously. Because, like, why of all the things to call it, why would you call – I mean, I get kind of the reason why, but they kept saying it, like, with this – with no irony in their voice. They're like, I got to jack in.
That alone earns it the PG-13 rating there. So
Like, it just made me chuckle. It made me laugh the entire time.
So he decides he's going to do this. He does it with the help of the resident tech nerd in the office, a guy named Whitney, played also by Vincent D'Onofrio. And he goes inside where he then ends up assuming the role of a bank teller named John Ferguson, and he begins trying to put the pieces together. Now, forces are working against him, though, as the previously mentioned bartender, remember, also played by Vincent D'Onofrio, he has read the secret message that was given to him at the beginning of the movie and is now hip to the fact that this world that he lives in is not real. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, other forces are threatening Douglas as the lines between what is real and what is a computer program are blurred. It's a complicated little story dealing with something that, like we said, seemed like the distant future in 99, but seems a bit dated today. But I'm going to let Jason get us started here. Give us a few of your thoughts on The 13th Floor.
Okay. First and foremost, I need to explain to anyone who doesn't know how Todd's shows work is he messages you out of the blue, you know, and he's like, hey, come on my show. And I'm like, okay, don't hurt me. And then Todd's like, I got a list of movies. Pick one. And he showed me the list, and this movie jumped at me, and the reason why. And I have to wonder if anyone else out there has experienced this. Was from 1998, like the end of 1998, to at least 2001, the trailer for this movie was on every darn videotape that I rented store.
I have no memory of that at all.
Literally, I would rent Go. There's a trailer for it. I would rent Fight Club. There it was. American Pie 2. Oh, there it is. Like, why is this on every stupid tape that I'm renting? What is this movie? And I never watched it because I just seen the trailer so much that it just, like, aggravated me. And I didn't know anything. If you watch the trailer now, which I did, I watched the trailer after I watched the movie because I was curious. It's the most 90s trailer you'll ever watch. It's hilariously dated because it's got this techno music going behind it. And then it's got, like, that – I don't know if you remember trailers in the 90s, how they were. But it was always that one voiceover guy who was like, on the 13th floor, there was a secret. And then Greg Bierko would, like, look with his, you know, baby blue eyes flashing towards the window, and then it'll be like, there's a secret that's so deadly. And then there's Vincent D'Onofrio, like, with the gun shooting, and all, like, it was a crazy dated trailer. Like, it's wild to watch right now. But that's why I picked this movie, because I was like, I'm finally gonna watch The 13th Floor, and it is the stupidest movie I have ever seen in my life. It's not bad. Is just stupid because 15 minutes into the movie, I saw the twist coming. And I just kept yelling, can we just get to the twist? I know and
we're not going to do that here just yet. We will talk about the twist.
That's
but
fine.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I think we'll hold off a little
that's fine.
Bit.
I won't say what it is, but I mean, I swear they telegraph it. They telegraph it so much. You even kind of hinted at it. And I'm like, okay, come on. It's this thing. Just get to it. And then they just kind of plod along with the thing. Now, as a fan of the show 24, it was awesome to see Dennis Haysbert in this. And he's actually like one of the better parts of the movie.
He's the highlight for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I want him in a cop show like right now still. I think he could do it. I think he could still do a cop show right now.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I'm a fan of 24 as well, and that's, you know, where I kind of got to know him. And, you know, just anytime he shows up, I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. And he's great in this movie. I mean, we'll kind of talk about the differing tones of this film because it has, you know, portions that are taking place in modern day 1999 and portions that are taking place in this virtual 1937. And Dennis Haysbert, he just embodies the kind of spirit of like a 1930s police movie, you know, police detective type of character, that untrusting guy, you know, who's just always asking the awkward questions and like, he knows you're guilty, that type of thing. He's just got such a great screen presence, and you literally could like pluck him out of this and stick him in one of those like 1930s cop movies and he'd be a perfect fit. And the wild thing about it is his character only exists in 1999 in this movie. So the fact that he's kind of, you know, giving you this 30s cop vibe is great.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. He was like the only thing I was looking forward to when this movie was happening. And he's not in it a whole lot. But when he's there, I'm very happy. But yeah, he's just there trying to, you know, figure out, you know, what happened to Fuller. He's trying to figure out where our main guy, Douglas Hall, was the night of the murder. And yeah, he completely plays it like a 1940s, like Private Eye, like I know where you were. I know what you were up to. You're going to tell me what you did now. Take a drag of cigarette. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Yeah. He's even got the hat, you know, he's got the outfit, the whole works. It's great.
And he smoked.
Well, jumping back to, you know, kind of the basics about the movie, which it's weird to say that because nothing about this is basic. It's very complicated.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, the big thing that stuck in my mind after I was done watching it was just, well, that was confusing. You know, it's just got layer upon layer. And in some cases, I think the film gets a little too complicated for its own good, you know. Like you mentioned, there's a lot of build up to a big twist, and we'll talk about that here in a bit. And it is, I think, for a lot of folks, pretty obvious. I mean, I dare say some listeners might have figured it out already as we've been talking.
I'm sure.
But even before that, though, the film really doesn't do a good job of kind of explaining to us the rules of this technology, you know, how it works, what it's for, why did they create this thing? I mean,
oh yeah.
I want to get your take on it because I mean, here we're looking at it, what, another 25 years down the line here, so we're looking at it with eyes of, well, that's not the way that kind of technology works. But I mean, does the film just suffer because now we are wiser, or does it suffer because it didn't make any sense in the first place?
Man, maybe it was like a misfortune to be watching this in this day and age. I wonder what it would have been like to watch it in 1999. But I also felt like even if I watched it in 1999, I would have seen it coming. I would have maybe have pieced it together. See, it's interesting you say that, like, you know, it's complicated, and it is a complicated movie, but I was able to follow it because, again, I saw what was coming. And so when they were presenting with like, oh, well, this happened, we can't explain why this happened. And I was like, well, because of twist. And then I'm like, just get to the twist. And then they were like, oh, well, we could, you know, this couldn't have happened because of XYZ. And I'm just like, the twist. So, you know, yeah, they wrote a very complex story, you know, with all this like stuff. They wanted you to like try to pay attention to like piece it together. Mm-hmm. It's like they wanted you to like solve the mystery with like it's a mystery film. They want you to be like, oh, what did happen to what did happen to Fuller? What did the letter say? That was like the main mystery of the movie was like, okay, what did the letter say? Because right. Douglas goes into the 1937 virtual reality to try to get the letter, and then you know he gets into this big giant fight scene, and he tries to read the letter, but then like it falls into like a pool, so it gets wet, so he doesn't get to read it, and so we're just kind of like, what does the letter say? Like that's the one thing we're trying to like grab onto. We're like, okay, you know, we get where this is going, but what does the letter say exactly? And then we kind of find out because Vincent D'Onofrio says what the contents say. And then that's when I think I was like, okay, finally, you're getting to the twist.
The thing that threw me early on when they first start, you know, quote unquote, jacking in and all that kind of stuff is
sorry,
just kind of the, you know, the concept that, okay, when Craig Bierko's character goes into this virtual world, this 1937. He ends up in the body of this guy who's a bank teller and is also played by Bierko. So he's essentially, you know, in his double, his doppelganger in this virtual reality. And I was like, so can you only inhabit the body of this person that looks like you? Because, you know, Armin Mueller-Stahl also has a double in the world. D'Onofrio does. But, so does that mean everybody has a double in there? I mean, you know, why couldn't Bierko go into D'Onofrio's, you know, character? Or what? I mean, it's actually, the more I thought about it, I was like, it's like Quantum Leap, you know? I mean, which I love that show. Yeah. But they basically, like, go into somebody else's body and they somehow have some of their own memories, but it's a little Swiss cheese, which is the term that they always used on Quantum Leap. And when they come out again, you know, do they remember it? Sort of. Do the characters in the virtual world remember it? Sort of. Not exactly.
We do find out, actually. We do get the part after Douglas leaves the 1937 version of him. We do get that scene where John Ferguson walks back to the bar and he just looks completely lost.
Right.
And he even goes up to D'Onofrio's bartender character and is like, can you tell me where I am? So I think it's just basically like, Douglas completely took control of this guy's body and the guy's like just has like a blank period.
Yeah, but then there's the whole sequence where he meets up with Armin Mueller-Stahl's character in 1937, and he's like trying to reconstruct things and get him to remember things and all that. So it was fuzzy, you know, as far as how the rules of this virtual world work. And then the other frustration I had with it was I was never clear on why did they create this, you know, because when Dennis Haysbert first shows up and is interviewing people and he's talking to the 1999 version of D'Onofrio, the nerdy guy. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, so it's a game and he's like, oh no, he kind of dismisses it. You know, it's much more than a game, but they never really say, why is this so great? What is this going to achieve? How is this going to benefit humanity? It's basically just, wouldn't it be cool to walk around in 1937? And then even we find out that Armin Mueller-Stahl's character, the scientist that created this all, what is he doing when he goes back to 1937? He's having sex with the cigarette girls at the club. You know? And it's like, even back here in 1999, when virtual reality is like this, you know, imaginary new frontier or whatever, the best reason they can come up with for it to exist is so that old guys can go back and have virtual sex.
I mean, think about it, Todd. I mean, that's the whole reason why a lot of technology exists nowadays. That's why the internet was created. That's why apps were invented, so to speak. That's the sole source of every invention from like 1987 onward. It was just so guys can go have sex.
Well, and speaking of the 1980s, one of the things that was wild about this to me was just the look of this whole technology thing, because it seems like this movie did have some degree of budget, but I think they spent it all on the 1930s look, because the stuff that goes on with the actual device where we see it is like really cheesy. I mean, it looks like it looks like Tron, you know what I mean?
It's it does.
And don't get me wrong, I love Tron, but this is 1999. This is the year The Matrix came out.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically all we get for, you know, like when they turn on this machine is that it looks like a CAT scan machine out of a hospital, and then you get the green lasers. You know, I mean, it's all about the green lasers.
Green lasers. That's what it was. that too, kids, was what was big in the 90s, green lasers. Now lasers are red, but back then they were green.
No, if they were green, you knew that was something special. Absolutely. Yes. Well, what did you think of the 1930s stuff? Because I do think, like we kind of say, the movie is really kind of uneven with things and such, and you know, I don't know that it sells me on the technology stuff here in the modern day stuff, but I thought the 30s stuff was kind of cool.
I do too. I really dug the what they did with the 30s stuff. It really felt real. It felt like you know, I think that was like what they were trying to do. They wanted that to be the main focus of the film. Was, you know, hey, look, we're making this, you know, simulation of 1937. And so it looks like 1937. You even got the people kind of talking like this. See, we're going to go over to that dame over there. You're going to go talk to her. She's got cigarettes. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, they got the full immersion going on. And I thought they did a good job.
I agree. I think the look of it was really nice. And what you're saying there about kind of the way they talk, the way that they act and all that, it's very much like what you would expect to see in a 30s era movie, which, you know, I'm always kind of like, I don't know how realistic that is, you know, but for the idea that this is a virtual reality, it kind of makes sense that the creators might base it off of like a 30s movie rather than 30s reality, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the things that I've always appreciated about Back to the Future Part 3, okay? I've heard complaints of Back to the Future Part 3 that they go, that's not the way the real Old West was. That's the way a Western movie was. And I was kind of like, yeah, but that's kind of the point, you know, to have it be inspired by a Western movie rather than actual reality. Yeah. And it's kind of the same idea here, where it very much feels like something out of an actual pre-code 30s film. You know, the sets, while they look nice and all that, also have that kind of fakeness to them where it looks like a movie backlot. And I just found that to be appropriate. And they also do some stuff with like the color saturation and all that, where it has kind of this muted color scheme, you know, kind of like what they did.
They even mentioned that in the movie itself. When he came back, Vincent D'Onofrio's like the nerdy character. He's like, so how did it look? How did it feel? He's like, well, it's a little tinted, kind of weird, but nobody noticed.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was kind of a nice touch.
Yeah. There's a part of me that almost wanted them to go full on black and white for those.
Right.
I thought that would have been cool.
That would have been hilarious. Yeah.
We've mentioned a bunch of the cast members here. You know, we both said that Haysbert was a highlight, but let's talk a bit more about our main characters, our main actors here. I guess, you know, I'll let you jump in first. I mean, what do you think of like Craig Bierko here? I mean, I got to admit, he was a familiar looking face to me, but I was like, do I know this guy? I'm not sure if I know this guy from anything.
Yeah. Well, like, okay. The name came up and I had that one meme that's floating around the internet. I was like, oh, that's a name that I haven't heard in a very long time. He showed up a lot in like 90s movies. Mainly he was, you know, and I don't think there were huge parts by any means, but like he was in Long Kiss Goodnight. He was in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And probably the pinnacle of his career, he was in Dickie Roberts' Former Child Star. I mean, you can't argue. But you know what he was, like, probably in being serious, what he was probably known as? He was the main guy in Scary Movie 4 that kind of looked like Tom Cruise.
I get all those scary movies mixed up. They all blur together in my head.
A Scary Movie 4 was the one that was parodying like the Signs and Saw movie and whatnot. It took place like on the farm, and he played like the love interest of Anna Faris's character, Cindy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know why I know all the scary movie lore, but that's me for you.
We've all got those things, you know. For me, it's Police Academy movies, so you know.
Okay, all right, there you go. But anyway, yeah. So he was like a name I haven't heard in a very long time, but when I saw him pop up, I was like, oh, Greg Bierich! Wow, I have not seen this dude in a heck of a long time, and it was interesting. He's not a bad actor by any means. I just see comedy from him, and he was not really funny in this.
Oh no, I mean, there's not much of this movie that's funny at all, really. I mean,
yeah,
he struck me as, I don't know, kind of flat. He was an odd choice for the lead here.
He was miscast for sure. This is not the guy you should have got for this part. I don't know what agent, like, you know, did him a favor or what happened here, but yeah, he was not the guy that should have been in this part.
I don't know that his agent was doing him a whole lot of favors, because one of the things I did read about him at one point here as I was getting ready for the podcast was that he was offered the role of Chandler on Friends but turned it down.
Yes, I read that too. Yes, so... I read that too.
But I mean... I don't know. His character just didn't seem quite right to me. I mean, he's this, you know, stylish, attractive, you got to assume wealthy guy from the apartment that he lives in and all that. And I was like, you know, I would have made him more of like a geeky, nerdy type of character, you know, more like the 90s version of D'Onofrio we've gotten this. Because, I mean, he's, you know, make him geek out over that. Oh, yeah, it's virtual reality. You could walk around in 1937 and have sex with the cigarette girl, you know, and all that stuff. And it was, I don't know, it just seemed odd that here he is, this very polished and you know, stylish type of guy here. It just didn't seem like the right fit for the type of character that he's supposed to be.
And then, like, later in the movie, we're not in spoilers yet, but the later half of the movie when he kind of does different, his character's a little bit different, I did not believe that for a minute. Like, I could not see that coming from him. Yeah. Like I said, he was just not the guy for this part. Actually, what should have happened was I think him and Vincent D'Onofrio should have switched roles.
Yeah. Because
Vincent D'Onofrio is well known for playing, like, basically anything, but mostly a psychopath, which he kind of does in this movie. He gets a little bit of it. He gets to do a little bit of it, gets to be a little bit of a psychopath in the movie. But I think, like, he would have probably been better suited. But I think the problem was he wasn't good looking enough. You know what I mean?
I think D'Onofrio would have definitely brought more to the role. And I mean, D'Onofrio, I think, does a good job of juggling a couple of different, you know, characters, a couple of different approaches in this film, because he plays this geeky guy in 1999. He's sporting the hair that he had as Thor in Adventures in Babysitting again.
Yes.
And then he's, you know, this kind of slimy bartender in 1937. And, you know, they're both very different parts, and he does a great job with that. I would expect nothing less of Vincent D'Onofrio. So, I mean, in general, I think the supporting characters in this film, whether it's Vincent D'Onofrio, Dennis Haysbert, they outshine the leads in big ways. I mean, I would go even further as saying, you know, I mean, Craig Bierko didn't wow me too much. Gretchen Mol didn't either. It's just really very bland, I think, in this role. I mean, and I got to admit, she's someone that is blurry in my mind. A few episodes ago, I actually mixed her up with Joey Lauren Adams in a discussion that we were having.
Okay, because I can just see that. She doesn't
jump out in my mind, I guess. But, I mean, the character she's playing here is just really flat. And I would say even in both versions of the character, we have her in 99 and in 37, it's just there's not much there.
Yeah, so she's complicated because we don't really know a lot about her until like about midway through the movie. Mm-hmm. Then we discover something about her, and she's completely different when we discover this thing. And when she's like that, I thought she was more believable. I got her as that character, but when she was the Jane Foster? No, it's not Foster. Fuller.
Fuller,
Foster.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jane Foster's from Thor. Sorry. You mentioned Thor. My brain got crossed. But yeah, when she's Jane Fuller, I don't buy it. Like, I always just think something's up with her, and I don't believe her, like, anything she says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I mean, this will lead us towards revealing the twist here. But, you know, I think her best moment in this film is in the scene where we see her as a grocery store checkout
yes.
girl.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, where it's just, I don't know, it's a lot more interesting than anything else she's giving in the rest of the film. Now, again, talking about things that we don't totally buy, I'm kind of watching the scene and going, do I buy that someone that looks as glamorous as Gretchen Mol works at Safeway? I don't know, but, you know, it's...
Well, she pulled it off, though. I'm going to give her credit for that. I think she kind of pulled it off. Because when that happened, I actually believed that character more than I believed the Jane Fuller character.
I agree, absolutely. All right, let's stop beating around the bush. Let's get to
good, because I'm running out of creative ways to not spoil.
Well, and I'm going, do I want to attempt to describe this, or I'm going, maybe I should let Jason do it, because
if you want to take it,
yes, please reveal the twist for us. So folks,
I
want to
remind everybody that for 10 years I did a B-movie podcast with my pal Nolan. Todd was on it a few times. Mm-hmm. And I had the distinct pleasure to describe some of the weirdest, wackiest scenes that you've seen in cinema history. So let me pull out my expertise as I try to unpack this. Okay, so let's start with the letter. Because that's the key to the whole thing. So Douglas Hall, he goes to the 30s. He's trying to find the letter that Vincent D'Onofrio's character has. And he read it. He opened it. And he's pissed about something. He then he finds out that he's the bartender character is a simulation. And that the world is fake. And how he knows this is because he read the letter. And the letter says, get in your car, go drive to some place you've never been to before. And if there's any barricades or any signs or anything stopping you, you just plow right through those signs and you just keep on going. And then eventually everything's just going to stop. Everything's going to be quiet. There's nothing going to be around. And then Vincent D'Onofrio saw something, which we don't see right away. Uh-huh. Then it goes back to Douglas Hall, who gets, you know, pulled out of the 37. He comes back to 1999, and he's thinking about stuff, and he's piecing it together, and then he drives somewhere where he's never been to. He plows through a barricade, and he gets to, you know, this part where it's all quiet or whatever. What we see is, like, 1992 ASCII renderings of like graphs that like basically he is also in a simulated world. This 1999 that we've been in, the thing that I called 5 minutes into the movie, this is also a simulated world. That he's not real. None of this is real. Dennis Haysbert's character isn't real, which actually explained quite a lot. Once that was revealed, I'm like, okay, that's why he's acting like a 1940s, you know, gumshoe, because he was probably programmed that way.
Well, and what you're saying about kind of reaching the end of the world and the kind of the graph stuff, I mean, the only thing I could think to kind of describe it, again, thinking back to like Tron or something like that, but I just recently rewatched that one episode of The Simpsons where there's like a computer-generated version of Homer, and he goes through the wall, and there's this whole graphic world and stuff. It looks like that.
Yes, 100%. Yes, so... So we find out there's a world above this. They say that in the movie, like there's a world above us. And so all these characters, mostly Douglas and Jane, their above versions has been the one that's been plugging into the 1999 versions and been going around doing all this stuff. So that's where we learn that Douglas actually did murder Fuller, but it was the guy above him. And then the guy that's above him is married to Jane, who takes over the body of the grocery store woman named Natasha, who's like this like kind of gothy punk girl works at a grocery store. She's got like the lip piercings and is kind of like pale with the black lipstick. And she has like this I don't care attitude. And when Douglas like sees her in the grocery store, she's just is like, yeah, who are you, dude? I don't know you. Just slide your credit card. This is how you slide your credit card. Oh, that's another thing. Kids listening to this, 1999 credit cards were not as much of a thing as they are now. So this scene, if anyone from like if Gen or Gen Z watches this movie, they're gonna be so confused about why the guy didn't know how to run a credit card. Because she had to show him how to do it.
You don't want to write a check? No, that's what you do at the grocery store. Write a check.
Write a check. Write a check for 11 cents.
Yeah, like the dude, man.
Like the Big Lebowski. But anyway, so that was the big twist. This was a simulation. I caught it like way early in the movie when he was like, I don't remember what I did last night. I keep blacking out. And I'm like, gosh, I wonder why. Well, we got this old guy in 1937 who also says he blacks out. Could that be connected? I don't know. No, I knew this is what was happening. But then, so back to what I was talking about, Greg Bierko, his other self is supposed to be like this psychotic, you know, person. He's supposed to be really crazy and you know, he's out for Greg Bierko cannot pull that off. He is not the guy you hire to pull off. I'm a psycho who likes to murder people and, you know, force myself sexually on women. Like, no, he's not that guy.
No. I mean, there's very little kind of, you know, just shifting in tone or whatever when it comes to, you know, the overlord character or whatever you want to call him, you know, and the 99 version, all that. It gets to be a lot to kind of juggle it all in your mind and keep it straight, you know, and plus then there's the element that Jane in 1999, you know, she's disillusioned with her actual husband, the guy who's the murderer from the world that's over them, and she's now starting to fall in love with the virtual version of him. Yes. You know, Douglas. And you know, I don't even know how to describe it because it's just so confusing to keep all these balls in the air. I mean, I guess it's kind of like, you know, the twist, like you say, you see it coming a mile away that, you know, what we are led to believe is the real world is actually also a virtual world here. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it just too corny or does it work on a certain level?
See, that's so weird because I'm looking at the date of when this came out. This came out May 28th, 1999. The Matrix literally came out like right around that.
Yeah, just a few weeks before that.
And that was kind of also the big twist in that movie, but they reveal it really early on that, you know, yeah, your world, Neo, is a computer simulated world, and we're going to take you to the real world, which kind of sucks, honestly. But but yeah, I would almost say this was like a Matrix ripoff, but I don't know how they would have known about the Matrix. Yeah. Like, I don't know how they would have found that out. Like, this feels like the Asylum's version of the Matrix. Like, it's weird, but there's no way they could have known that was going to happen. So I don't really know like how I feel about that outside of like they were trying. But then we also got to remember, this is based on a book from, what did you say, the 50s?
64, I think it was. 60s. Yeah.
So you have to remember that as well. So, you know, I've not read, you know, I didn't know anything about that material before doing this show, honestly. So I don't know what that book is like. I don't know what the other movie is like. I don't know any of that, like how they handled all this. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. But yeah, there is one more twist that I'm dying to talk about, but I'll wait till you're ready for us to reveal it.
And that is
when the overlords take place, like the year that happens, because I spit my drink out when this was revealed. I don't know what your reaction was.
Oh, no. Yeah.
But I spit my drink out. But before we get to that, I want to talk about, just to kind of fill in some plot holes here. So apparently when your simulation dies and you're in your simulation, you die and your simulation takes over your body in the future. So that's what happens to Vincent D'Onofrio's character in the 30s. He gets hit by a car. And so the 30s version of him comes back to the 99 version of D'Onofrio. Mm-hmm. And then he starts running amok because he's in the future technically, and he's amazed at television. But then when the Overlord version takes over, he gets killed by McBain. So that leaves Douglas going into the future, where we find out it's the year 2024. Yes. And I was like, what?
Yep.
Like, I randomly picked this movie out of like a list of 8 movies you gave me, and I picked the one movie that ends in 2024. That is so hilarious.
Oh, it was weird. And and I'm like, you know, I mean, it's always strange when you see depictions of the future that you eventually end up living in, you know, mm-hmm. like,
yeah,
you know, think Back to the Future Part 2 and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, we don't dwell on it very long here, but I don't know. It all looked like, when you see like those fancy luxury hotels in like Dubai and stuff like that, that's what the future of 2024 looks like in this movie.
I was so confused by the 2024 in this movie, because he looks out the window and all I saw was the ocean and like those oil drill things that are like in the middle of the ocean and a bridge. And he's acting like this is the most fantastic thing he's ever seen in his life. He's like, oh my God, the future is amazing. It's ocean and an oil driller and a bridge. Oh my God. And I'm like studying the scene and I'm like, what is he looking at? Is there like a flying robot? Like, what is so amazing out there? There's nothing out there.
No.
It's just ocean, an ocean driller, a bridge. And then Fuller is there. The 2024 Fuller is there.
Right.
Because he's the one that invented the thing, which again, like Todd said, was never explained why they invented this outside of, hey, let's go to a virtual reality and have sex. He's like, yeah, that's my dad. I actually have a dad. That actually is my dad. Because we find out in the 99 version, he did not actually have a kid. So there was a plot confusion there as well. And then it just kind of ends. And he's into 2024. And Gretchen Mol's like, I got a lot to tell you.
a lot to tell everybody. We're all confused, you know?
Yeah, she's going to be like, you'll never guess who was president for 4 years. This is the craziest thing.
It's a weird movie. I mean, like you were saying at the beginning, I mean, I can't say that it's a bad movie. It had me engaged throughout, but at the same time, I was confused a lot of times, trying to catch up quite a bit of the time. And I do think, you know, I mean, as we've kind of gone through this discussion, I do think it's a film that, of course, it's going to, you know, be difficult to kind of take in maybe the way that the makers intended, because number one, we've got our own history behind us and seeing how this kind of technology, you know, has come to fruition in different ways. And also just, I think a key thing, we've brought it up several times in this discussion, is The Matrix. The Matrix came out a few months before this and, you know, tackled some similar concepts in a way that, you know, not just was revolutionary in terms of the storytelling, but just in terms of the way movies are made in general. I mean, talk about a movie that, you know, was one that changed the face of movie making.
Yeah.
The Matrix was that. And this is a film that, you know, kind of had similar themes that right about at the same time that, you know, just didn't have any hope of kind of, you know, hitting that same type of a touchstone moment.
Yeah. I agree. So I said it was stupid, and it is stupid, but that doesn't mean it's terrible. it actually was, I want to say, it was made competently. There was some thought that actually did go behind it. They did a good job. Some of the acting's pretty good. Not great, but it's pretty good. It's passable for what, we're trying to do. Outside of Greg Bierko, like I said, he's still wildly miscast. But otherwise, everything's pretty good. It looks good. If I put myself in the 1999 mind frame, the effects are amazing. In 1999, I think if they would have had like maybe one more script rewrite and maybe kind of cut out some of the clutter, it would be kind of a fun movie. It would be a fun action-y popcorn, turn your brain off kind of movie. But no, you need your brain fully turned on for this because there's just a lot of stuff happening and it gets kind of thrown at you really quickly. And then you're just trying to keep up. But again, it's not bad. It's just stupid. And I'm good with never seeing this again. I'm not doing this on my 90s show. I'll put it that way.
You're absolutely right in that. If you tune out at any point in this, you're going to get lost. There were a few moments where I did, and I had to go back and watch chunks of this again because I got lost along the way. So,
All
right. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll hear from some more of our podcasting friends, and then we'll be back with our movie recommendations here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
In a world where podcasts already seem to address every imaginable subject, one man broke new ground with a seemingly random obsession about exploding helicopters in movies. He was a podcaster on the edge, a maverick broadcaster who played by his own rules. Now, he has a last chance to talk about the strange way helicopters explode in film. Exploding Helicopter. Available on iTunes and Podomatic now. Think you know about chopper fireballs? Think again.
Hi, everybody. This is Todd. Just a quick reminder that you can help support the Forgotten Filmcast through Patreon. For just a few little old dollars a month, you can support this show and earn access to some great bonus features, including a bunch of the old episodes of this show, which are no longer available on the main podcast feed. Visit patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast to learn more, and thanks for your support.
What was it about the 90s that made movies so much better? How much of an impact did they make during that decade? And while we're at it, can we throw around some 90s slang? Join me, Jason Soto, a lover of all things 90s, as I do a deep dive into cinema from the best era ever. Rabbit Hole Podcasts present That's the Bomb, Yo! 90 Hella Rad Movies from the 90s. You can find this show on Anchor, Apple, Google, anywhere you get podcasts from, or its home location at rabbitholepodcasts.com. And who knows, maybe even Alicia Silverstone will finally accept my date.
Oh, as if!
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're happy to announce that we've installed Burns-O-Matic in-car heaters for your comfort and pleasure. When you receive your heater, you'll find it very easy to place in your car. Just roll down your front window and rest the heater's bracket on the window with the cylinder on the outside of the car. Roll up your window securely as far as it will go to hold the heater firmly in position. For maximum results, tilt the face of the heater towards the windshield and sit back and enjoy the show in healthful comfort. With these modern, safe, efficient in-car heaters, this drive-in theater will now remain open all year round. If you have any further questions about your Burns-O-Matic in-car heater, please contact one of our theater attendants. And remember, this drive-in theater will now remain open all year round, regardless of the weather.
All right, welcome back. It's time for our movie recommendations. This is the part of the show where each of us gets to talk about another movie, something that we want to encourage other folks to check out. It might be a forgotten film. It might be an old classic. Might be something new in the theaters or on streaming. It could be anything. So, Jason, what is your recommendation?
believe it or not, I've not seen this until like the other day. And I there's really no reason. I had no excuse. I just never got around to it. But it's on streaming right now. I think it's on Peacock, I want to say. And that's Nope from Jordan Peele.
I actually haven't had a chance to watch it yet either.
Okay. I won't spoil anything then. I'll save spoilers. But if you're a fan of Get Out and Us, I think you're going to like this movie because it's like similar veins in terms of style. Because Jordan Peele has like a style to his movies. Like they have like an interesting kind of feel to them. Like it, like you really do feel like you're in like another world, and it's really hard to like explain it even without spoiling it. It's just hard to explain. Cause like I felt like when I watched Get Out, which was like the first movie he did, I felt weird. Like something just felt weird and off. And I think that was just like that's just him. I think he wanted us to feel weird and off. And then I felt the same way with Us. Because that's, you know, that movie gets amped up, you know, from Get Out. It's even more tense and makes you feel, oh, this is really weird. And so Nope is in the same vein. Like, you know, you feel weird. We're introduced to these characters who are all really cool. They, like, everyone does like an amazing job in this movie. You got Keke Palmer. You got, I can never say that guy's name right, Daniel
Kaluuya.
Thank you.
I don't know if I said that right either, but you know, close enough.
Yeah, him. But he was, you know, the guy from Get Out, and they both do a wonderful job. A lot of the other actors that show up in the movie, a couple of them I won't spoil, but really wonderful job all the way around. And like the thing with his movies is you're trying to figure out what the thing is, like what is the movie about. Because, like, the trailers don't make it very obvious. Mm-hmm. Like, Us, I didn't know what that was about until I saw the movie. And then I was like, oh, okay, wow. That's a crazy idea of a movie. I'm assuming you've seen Us, Todd. I'm assuming you've seen Us.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen it either, but I know bits and things.
Dude.
Yeah.
Dude, you gotta watch these. These are amazing. Okay, anyway. I won't spoil Us then. But like when you get to what the thing about Us is, you're like, oh my God, all right. And then you get to the thing about Nope, you have ideas, but then it's like you think it's gonna go this way, and then it's like, nope, we're doing that. Nope, we're doing this. actually they have fun with the Nope thing too in the movie, I'll just put it that way. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a pretty cool movie. I will say the effects are fantastic, and I highly recommend. I recommend all three of his movies. So if somehow you've not seen all three of his movies, go check them out. They are well worth your time. They're all like they're different, like in terms of like the plot, but they're like same stylistically. Again, like it made me have like this weird feeling in the pit of my stomach each of the movies that I've seen. And that's a good thing. I want that. I want that out of a horror movie. Yeah. And Jordan Peele, who is a comedian, I want to remind everybody, makes some really good horror movies. Like it's amazing. I hope he keeps making movies. I know he's producing a lot, but I want him behind the director's chair again. I want him to write and direct another film because he's fantastic at it. So my recommendation, technically all three Jordan Peele movies, but specifically Nope, because that's the most recent one that I've seen.
I was actually just thinking earlier today that I need to see Nope. I haven't seen it yet because I was at the movies and the new promo that they've been playing at the AMC theater, you know, before the movie starts, you know, it's like for the Dolby Cinema thing. And so they're showing these clips from different movies and they have different filmmakers kind of talking about why their film is so much better with the Dolby Cinema. And one of them is Jordan Peele sitting there talking about Nope. And so I've seen that pop up the last couple of weeks. And I'm going, man, I keep on forgetting to watch Nope. You know? There's just too many movies.
We'll get to it, man. I recommend it.
Well, you're recommending that actually fits very well because the movie that I'm going to recommend is the one that I saw in the theater today, and it is produced by Jordan Peele, and that is the new film that is from Dev Patel called Monkey Man.
I
saw that this afternoon. It just released here in the last day as we're recording it. And I enjoyed this film quite a bit. It is just a wonderfully violent, grimy revenge story. Kind of mixes elements of something like John Wick with pieces of like Kill Bill. But at the same time, it's doing its own thing. It's very original just in terms of its approach. Doesn't have a whole lot of dialogue in it. It's just kind of the story unfolds going from one fight to another, you know, going through this kind of grimy crime world, underworld fighting, the whole kind of thing. Choreography is great. Not as polished as something like John Wick, but you know, I liked the approach here because it gives the feel that Dev Patel's character is more vulnerable. You know, like sometimes I feel like John Wick is like superhuman, you know, like he could just, you know, do anything and anticipate any move and all this stuff. And here the character just feels a little bit more believable. He does some pretty incredible things, but it also feels like he's kind of, you know, learning as the film goes and, you know, maybe is not as skilled when things begin, but, you know, begins to develop more as a fighter as the film goes on. It gets really, really bloody, really, really violent. The, you know, the end fights just move at a dizzying pace, but a very satisfying film and very unexpected, you know, for Dev Patel. I mean, he wrote this, directed, stars, produces. I mean, I didn't have this kind of film for him on my bingo card this year, but I mean, it works. It's a fun film, and you know, I would just encourage people to get out to the theater and see this one.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailer for this like a month or so ago, and it looked really cool. I really want to check this out. I don't get to the theater very often, but I'm hoping I can to check this out. If not, I'm going to watch it some point in the future because it looks amazing.
All right. Well, Jason, I want to thank you for being on the show. Before I let you go here, please remind everybody of where they can find you and all those dozens of podcasts you've got going on.
Yes. So the best place is rabbitholepodcast.com. There is where you can check out every show that is on the network. And again, I do not host every show. So, you know, if you're tired of my voice, you don't like me as a person, that's fine. There's other shows you can check out that I don't host. I just produce and edit, and that's really it. But there's just so many, you know, if literally anything you're into, movies, TV shows, nostalgia, books, I might have said music already, music again. So much, like, you can just go check out. Not a bad show. If I say so myself, if I could be so biased to say that there's not a bad show over there at rabbitholepodcast.com.
Excellent. I would say that's probably a pretty safe argument there. I mean, let's put it this way. A lot of the folks that are the hosts and regulars of Rabbit Hole podcast shows, I tap them to show up on this show quite a bit. So I appreciate you and your crew over there. So. Well, thanks again for being on this show, and I'll be back to close things here in just a moment here on the Forgotten Filmcast. Everybody, that's going to do it for this episode of the Forgotten Filmcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to read more reviews of Forgotten Films, you can find them over at the Forgotten Films blog. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can also follow me on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. And you can like Forgotten Films at Facebook. We welcome your questions, comments, and feedback about the show, so please email me at forgottenfilmcast@gmail.com. And don't forget about our Patreon page, patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast, where you can learn all about how you can help support this show. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again real soon.
You see, the old man was right, man. All those years of work, man. Did you find out what he was doing down there?
Yeah. He was having sex with girls.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.